Let us talk forestry. The government's target, as you know, is to plant 8,000 hectares a year. That translates to about 300 acres a week, a large farm a week. And there are obviously any number of different obstacles to that. But one that we don't often discuss is the shortage of foresters. This is just one of the things that I want to talk about with my next guest this morning as she steps away from her role as CEO of the Western Forestry Co-op. Marina Conway joins me from our Sligo studio. Marina, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Philip.
I love the fact, Marina, that a job that is above all guided by science, but as I would imagine very bureaucratic in nature now, was one that you were inspired to get into as a child because of Grizzly Adams.
Well, yes, you're showing my age now, Philip. But
yours and mine both.
Yeah. Look, I always loved trees and woodlands. I loved the magic of them and just disappearing on paths into them. But also, yeah, watching Grizzly Adams and Beachcombers and that as a child, it just inspired this dream in me to be a forest ranger. That's what I want to do.
You wrote to Quilcha as a teenager and said, how do I become a forester?
I did, yeah. I wrote to and the Forest Service at the time and said, yeah, I want to be a forester. I want to go to forestry school. How do I do that? Where do I go? What do I do? And they wrote back and told me about Ag Science Forestry in UCD, and I applied for it. And yeah, that's how I found out about it.
Had there been a little patch of woods or some special place that had inspired you at home?
I'm a coastal girl. I grew up beside the sea, which is probably even more unusual to people. But yeah, there was a little woodland, little Mearns's Valley. To me as a child, it was huge. But
In Inniscrone,
yeah, in County Sligo. So yeah, I grew up beside a lovely 3 mile beach. And always loved the land and the trees and the mountains. And Mearns's Valley, a small little hazelwood really along a river. But to me as a child, it was huge. And it was magical. Yeah, I loved it.
If we were to look at the current crop of forestry graduates, how many would there be in a year?
So at the moment, unfortunately, I think an average across is two. There's two universities that give graduates, and then also a level 6 from Ballyhays. But you have to have a level 7 or higher to be able to operate as a registered forester in Ireland. So on average at the moment, I think it's about 15 graduates a year, which isn't enough.
How many are retiring?
So recently I'm on a forestry education task force at the moment, and the replacement rate alone for foresters has been estimated at about 31 a year. And that's just the replacement rate, Philip. That's just to cover normal retirees.
Doesn't allow us to expand the industry.
It doesn't account for that target of 8,000 hectares or what's required, all the additional work that's required to deliver all the different schemes and that in forestry. It doesn't account for that, really.
We think of and we identify the choke point to afforestation as being the bureaucratic process. But how much is this shortage of actual foresters contributing to it, Marina?
Well, I guess the shortage of foresters is it's not totally contributing to the forestation, because we're not getting enough inquiries really in forestation. I guess across the country, which is probably a bigger issue and worry for everybody. But it's to manage our forests as well requires an awful lot of work as foresters too. So it's not just afforestation. But if there was plenty of afforestation inquiries, I think you'd have maybe a lot more foresters working in it. I think for foresters working in the industry, it's become people get into forestry like myself, a lot of people, because they want to be outdoors working in the woods. That's the dream. That's probably what attracts a lot of people to working in forestry. Mm-hmm. But it's become, at the
spreadsheets
moment.
Spreadsheets and forms,
yeah,
bureaucracy.
Yeah, there's a lot of time. You know, we would say to any young forester coming to us, that really it's half inside and it's half outside.
Okay, well, is that at the root of the hesitation of landowners and farmers to go down the forestry route? Because, these complaints would be relatively well justified. The ferocious amount of bureaucracy, as you're saying, the problems getting the felling licences, loss of decision-making control over the land. Are you concerned that there's a shortage of trust there between farmers and the idea of forestry?
Yeah, there's and lack of information, knowledge and awareness too, Philip. It's delays and it's communication. Do you know, people, it's become so complex, really. We try to keep it as simple as possible to try and explain to a landowner what's involved. And, you know, farmers usually generally make kind of quick decisions about how they want to manage their land. And they have lots of other schemes as well that they have to consider. So forestry, it just, the turnaround times aren't quick enough to enable people to make decisions. And then the communication about why, and the communication about what needs to be done, and the communication about what this involves, you know, it isn't there either. And like for foresters, I guess we've become, I would say we're one of the most time poor professions out there at the moment. We're not, we don't have the time to engage as much with people as we really would want. It's become a very much a top down approach rather than bottom up. We need so much more people and boots on the ground informing, working with farmers, you know, at grassroots level, you know, in educating them and bringing them with us. And we don't, because we don't have enough people and because it's become so bureaucratic, we don't have enough time to spend with these people. That's a deficit there, definitely.
And one of the other deficits might be a lack of trust between those who are concerned about the environment and forestry, or the idea of forestry again, because they think of monoculture, Sitka spruce, and they think of the damage to water quality and the way that we used to drain bogs and fertilise with rock phosphate and so on. Your area of research was actually in water quality and forestry. How long has it been since we have forested in that destructive model?
I suppose you're referring there to the planting of peatlands in particular, blanket bogs and that. I know that hasn't gone on for a very long time. When I'm talking about what was planted, and you know, people, I suppose when people think of monoculture and they think of big swathes of Sitka spruce, especially maybe along the western seaboard, these were virgin blanket bogs that were drained and fertilised at the time, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, at a time when there was a very different objective and goals. It was really about economics. It was about trying to, social forestry, really, actually. It was about trying to stem the flow of emigration out of the west of Ireland and create jobs.
Did it work? I mean, whatever about the environmental damage, did it actually keep people on the land?
I did. I know from talking to the foresters of the time, like in places like Mayo and Sligo and that, the local forester was one of the biggest employers. He could have a team of 50, 60 men under him, because it was all manual. You know, everything was done manual. So, and there was big areas being planted at the time. So it definitely, and it helped farmers, you know, supplement their income, and local people supplement their income. So it was a big employer, absolutely. And you know, and as well, like the objective at the time was really that is the only land that the state, and state was the only one planting, would consider for forestry. They would not, farmland, agricultural land was not an option. You know, it was really just to be what was seen as unproductive land.
And that's the difference, is it, in the model in the co-op that you're following, where you're trying to encourage landowners not to sell up and let somebody else plant, but to plant and manage on their own land.
Yeah, so what Western Forestry Co-op has been very successful in doing, or what our whole ethos is about, is encouraging farmers to forest or plant their own land if that's the best option for them, rather than sell it. So, you know, we've been all about empowering farmers, landowners and communities, and we want to see our forests retained with our landowners, retained with our people and with our local communities, and want to see all the benefits from forestry being retained in local communities. So, when landowners and farmers are the ones who actually get involved in forestry, I have seen that it's a much more positive result than it is when I guess, you know, a nameless, faceless investor, let's say, is the person who buys the land and establishes forests. And, you know, in my experience as well, farmers are more inclined to plant many different types of forests, and for many different types of reasons. So they will, you know, the commerciality is an aspect of it, but also recreation and biodiversity and tourism, and, you know, the many different reasons why, and many different types of forests. And as well, if somebody was really upset about forestry in a certain area, they're the ones who will engage more with the local people. So it was a lot more acceptable because they were part of the community and they cared about the community. So like, for me, I guess my passion has always been about what I call Indigenous farm forestry. It's really about keeping our forests with our landowners and farmers, okay, and empowering them to do it. And I think that's what we should be doing.
The very opposite of that monoculture Sitka spruce model that is, you know, well, three of the dirtiest words in ecological circles. Can you play devil's advocate for us for a moment? Is there anything to be said in favour of the Sitka spruce?
Oh, well, look, Sitka spruce, you know, I've said this before and people might want to send a few daggers at me now. I'll defend her all day long, Philip, because she is an amazing tree and gets such abuse. Like, it's not the tree, but it's the way it's planted and how it's managed. So, you know, when people get very animated and hate poor old Sitka, as a tree, she gives us so much. It's the backbone of the forest industry in this country. It's the backbone of the timber. And in our farms, in our businesses and in our homes, it's Sitka spruce that is in the constructions, in the fences. It's the main commercial timber that we have in this country at the moment. So it does give us so much. So I think, and look, there's opportunity and there's there for us to plant other diverse conifers and manage them maybe differently. But
love the tree, not the way it's planted, is
yeah,
what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you know, there's no point taking it out on the tree. It's not the tree. No hatred needed for poor Sitka here. It's how we manage it and where we put it. And yeah, if you put it, you know, right up to a stream and in a bog and beside somebody's house and it shades them out, of course no one's going to like that. But you could do that if you put intensive oak all around the place as well, you know, so it'd take a lot longer maybe. But it's all about how you manage it. Absolutely. And that's what we have to, and that's what we are doing an awful lot better, in fairness. You know, they're like the days of, you know, there's a huge amount of investigation goes into any application for forestry before we plant it. So there's an awful lot of things that are considered.
You're leaving your job as CEO, but you're not leaving forestry. What are you doing?
Well, I actually don't. I don't know yet. People might find this a little bit strange, but I don't have a plan. I'm just taking some time out. You know, I've done 11 years as CEO, and during that time, you know, I've really enjoyed it. I've learned a lot.
Well, then let me ask you: as you find your next route through life, and you go for a walk in a forest, pick your top two or three forests in the country.
Okay. Well, as a forester, that's a really hard thing to do because I love them all. Like, I love all forests,
you're
honestly.
You're allowed a favourite. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, but I do. I mean, like, when I look back, like, I've been to places that really, you know, like, okay, so we've only a small amount of really, you know, ancient native woodlands in this country. Like, when I walk into the oak woods in Killarney or in Glenveagh, or if I go into Old Head Woodland, this amazing, beautiful oak woodland right down to the sand dunes in Lewisburg and Mayo, those places just completely light me up.
Old Head Woodland in Lewisburg, did you say?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And that's a coastal oak woodland, which is so rare in this country. Right down onto the sand dunes, the most amazing, beautiful oak trees. So that places like that light me up. And then there's been some projects, I suppose. We did a lovely neighbourhood in Ball, County Mayo. It was 50 acres that had never been accessible. The old landlords left it to the community and it was completely choked by laurel. And we cleared all that, put in paths and opened it up. And when I go, I was there recently and walked, and oh my God, like every time I go in there, it just lights up my heart. It's
so
great.
Old Head, Ball and Killarney, am I picking the three correct ones from that list?
No, there's three suggestions. I don't have favourites, Philip.
Okay, all right. No favourites.
I love all trees.
Marina Conway, outgoing CEO of the Western Forestry Co-op. Thanks very much for talking to us this morning, and every continued success and happiness. We'll take a break.